Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there, and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson, joined as always by Kevin Zimmerman, Snub Edition, everyone's favorite. Hello,
we
Kevin.
Always, every year. How many years have we had this? Like, four in a row?
Yeah, so I kind of wanted to start there with that tone, I guess, because if you're coming to this podcast who expects us to scream and yell about how disgraceful this act is, if you're not familiar with what we're reacting to earlier today on Tuesday, Chris Paul is an NBA All-Star reserve. Devin Booker is not. It looks like Zion Williamson was the guy, at least like in terms of looking at the cases and stuff, is the guy that ultimately got the nod over him. We'll get into why that's funny in a bit. But I wanted to bring that tone anyway, because we had a podcast about, gosh, it was probably 2.5-3 years ago now at this point, at least 2 years ago, where there was a, I believe it was Sports Illustrated's top 100 players or something, and Book was like 60th on it or something. And it was so outrageous and erroneous that we had like a huge podcast where we basically said, like, this is where we're going to talk about this for a while, and then we're not going to talk about it either ever again or in a really long time. And I don't know how you feel, Kevin. I'm not saying you can't lash out if you don't want to, if you feel like Devin's been really slighted here. That's the only thing that I really take umbrage with in this, is just it's blatant disrespect to him that he didn't make it. I also think that his case was quote unquote close, but the whole comparing cases to others, there's only one spot here, one spot there. It does get a little bit ridiculous, nothing to get too upset about, but they keep slighting the man, and LeBron had something to say about it.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's a numbers game. When you look at the guys who made it, all of them are super deserving. Even Zion, we'll get into that bit a sec about his team, but he's having a ridiculous season. So when you look at the numbers game, honestly, in my mind, I'm thinking it's like cannibalism almost, because I think voters certainly looked at the Suns' record and they were like, someone has to make it out of that team. And it just came down to him and Chris Paul. And Chris Paul, I think unequivocally, maybe, I think unequivocally between you and me, he's been the better, more consistent dude out of the two, even though Book's come on really, really strong and looks like he's definitely the guy on this team if you had to pick the guy. So I think just the vote probably between them split a lot. And if Chris Paul wasn't on this team and this team was 2010, even Book's start, I think he would just be like an automatic bid. But I think that does play a heavy role in the coach's decision here.
Yeah, I think that, am I muted? I'm not muted. Whoa. Good job, Kel. You unmuted. You need to trust yourself more. I'm with you a bit. Yeah. So I think that Chris Paul was the most deserving of the two. I think that he has unequivocally been their best player this year. I think that he has been their most consistent player. He's impacted the most games. There's just a lot there. Now the whole, we need to pick one of these two to make it for the Suns is something that makes sense when you have to make room for other guys that really, really deserve it. So I think there are certain years where you've got all these guys in the mix. Remember, we saw a couple names go east. We saw James Harden go east, which took an all-star spot or made an all-star guard spot available, essentially. And we've seen movement like that lately, and injuries and whatnot that have opened up these spots. And I think that of the candidates that Book was competing with this year, it was the weakest it's been in the past 2 to 3 years, I would say. I would say that I had an issue with him not making it last year and not making it even the year before that, when the Suns were awful and his stats were worse than they were last year. But I still thought that he was just really fantastic and deserved the nod anyway. With that being said, I think if you take the season that he had right now at the All-Star break and put it against those cases from a year ago and 2 years ago, I don't think he would have made it then either. I think that my issue is that there were just weaker cases being made, and making room like that and saying like, okay, we just have to pick one of these guys to make it when both of them might deserve it. I didn't really see Zion's case as really being that crazy. I looked this up. So Book had the hamstring injury, and since then he's been awesome. Zion has as well. That's 15 game for Zion. He's averaging 26.7 points per game, 5.9 rebounds, 4 assists. He's shooting 65% from the field, 75 at the line. Book over that time is averaging 26.8 points per game, shooting 53, 44, 88, 4 rebounds, 4 assists a game, and that's 12 games for Book. And they both had similar seasons so far, where Zion got off to a slow start, Book got off to a slow start. And for it to be the tiebreak, I don't understand what the big edge is that Zion got in terms of, again, I just read the offensive stats. Maybe there are some advanced numbers that I particularly don't care about that look great for Zion and don't for Devin. But Zion's the worst defender. I feel comfortable in saying that Zion has been worse on defense than Book has this year, and Zion's on the far worst team. Pelicans are 13-17. They're not going anywhere. The Suns are 20-10. They're a top 5 record in the league right now. They could be on top of the East, I believe, or like one game out of it, essentially. So I thought Conley was the one that was going to catch me off guard. But not Zion. So it was expected for me. I didn't think he was going to make it, but still a little upsetting, I guess.
To me, I'm looking at it like, yeah, I can't argue about any of these dudes. Like, if you look at Anthony Davis's numbers, his numbers are whatever too. And you just have to vote him in because he's the Lakers. But I mean, Zion's are historic on track to be at least. And again, like, I would be curious if you straight up asked Monty Williams, like, hey, if you had to pick one between Chris and Devin, like, who would you pick? And he would probably be like, oh, don't ask me that, Kellen, you know? So that's to me how it came down to it. And I'm curious to see the voting. I don't know if that stuff pops up about guys who got votes who aren't in this field right now, but I'd be curious to see who is next up.
I believe they don't even show the results of the coaches' vote. I went to the
Howard
official. Yeah, I know. And it's very intentional. I believe they don't, at least. The NBA didn't have it in their official story for this one, like they did with the starters and such, including all the other votes that were in there. I'm not crazy about it either way. And I think that it's pretty obvious that, especially when someone like LeBron says that when Davis sits out and it appears that he is not going to play, I think they put a timeline on him like a week ago of a month that he's going to be out. Book's in line. He can be the replacement for Anthony Davis, and I think he will be. I don't think that changes a ton, though. Like, it's still clear now, 2 years in a row, that he is not thought of as favorably in this little minute way, right? Like, it's very small. It's not like, I don't think the coaches disrespect him or like don't think he's a very good basketball player. Just when they have to make this decision, they don't look at him as favorably as others, I think.
Yeah. And
last year was bad too, when Russ got it over him too.
Last year was a lot worse to me, if I'm looking at it straight
me
up.
Me too.
Just because of the field, like you mentioned, the field just wasn't that strong. I think one thing, if you want to take a positive out of this, is you kind of get the best of both worlds, assuming he does get in, where I think it really is important for guys. It would be for me, to say, okay, I'm a 2-time All-Star, I'm a 3-time All-Star, that kind of thing. And then, like, you know, he's pissed off still. Like, he's going to accept it if he gets invited as an alternate replacement dude, but this Monty at the back of his head's probably like, huh, this is good. I get he's taking notes of this and he's pissed off. He's going to be pissed off for the rest of the year again. So I think from that weird like narrative perspective and knowing him, how competitive he is, it's not the worst thing in the world if you're a Suns fan. So you can take that if you want to be a positive person.
Yeah, he's always been better after the All-Star break too. Like, his numbers, especially in like February and March, are pretty absurd, and they have continued to be right now, and probably will be next month as well. But from at least hearing him speak through the media over the past, ever since he got here, I have said this on here before and have said it in other places, but I think that after he didn't make it 2 years ago, and then he had that summer was the whole double team video with Joakim Noah, where he took all this crazy, unwarranted criticism out of nowhere. I got a sense that he didn't care nearly as much, and not saying that he cared a ton before, but just really took away those opinions from like really impacting him. But this one's kind of different because it's like it's coaches. So I wish it was like Gilbert Arenas and him not getting invited to the Team USA, and it was like four coaches that he can just obliterate. That's one of my favorite Gilbert Arenas stories, is that he played, I think it was in Phoenix. Yeah. He played Mike D'Antoni for the first time since getting slided for the all-star team. And that's still the record for the most points scored in that building. Right.
I don't know, but probably
it was like 60 or something. He went nuts, and I wish he could do that, but he's just going to have to do it against every single coach now. Do you want to talk about the last week of games first or Damian Jones?
Let's do the last week of games first. No offense.
Okay. Jones. Well, yeah, I mean, Damian Jones, not that interesting to talk about, but we'll get into like some roster stuff there because people are asking now, what does that open roster spot mean? We'll tell you what we think it means. Wow, I'm teasing segments now, Kevin. Just the radio just influencing me like crazy. So we had a podcast episode that I want to shout out people that gave us positive feedback. I think that was the episode for me where that was probably the most I've had people reach out and say like they really enjoyed the conversation, which was nice because we took a different approach and we were both just our basketball nerddom was like turned up after seeing that game, and we're just really interested to talk about it in that way.
It's like the same sound DeAndre Ayton made when someone brought up if he's defensive player of the year last night. That's the feeling I had inside of me.
I'm just going to keep on talking after you said that. I brought it up. I'm trying to act like it didn't happen, but it did. So after that game, Kevin, they played playoff basketball, and then, boy, they played three bad quarters against the Pelicans, and ever since then they've outscored teams by 92 points in the last nine quarters. They obliterated the Pelicans in the fourth, which added up to them obliterating them in the whole game. A very shorthanded Memphis team never stood a chance, and a shorthanded Portland team just got worn down in the way that I think that the Suns wore down the Sixers, where I think the Blazers were up for that game and they were playing well, to a much lower standard. Of course, they weren't playing at the quality of that the Sixers were in that game in Phoenix, but Portland was up for it. And then all of a sudden Phoenix just exploded and Portland never stood a chance. They've now won 9 of their last 10 of 12. They are 20-10. I think I kind of agree with what we've talked about in the past week or two, where I'm not willing to make any grand declarations about where they're at. They're a good team, threatening on right now. If they continue this for the next like 2 or 3 weeks, they're a very good team to the point where you can talk about them winning a playoff series or two. But for now, I think we're just seeing continuity, health, and just their two best players finally coming together, especially Book in that Portland game. But that's the thing. You just look at those splits that I brought up with Book since he came back from the hamstring injury. Chris Paul is putting up like a true shooting percentage of like 65 and averaging 20 a game with 9 assists a game in that run too. So those two have just been ridiculous for a month straight now. And wouldn't you know it, that translates to a whole lot of winning.
I think they've been playing well dating back to two Pelicans games ago. Yeah, two Pelicans games ago. Just beating good teams, beating teams when they're not completely on that night. Even the Nets game, like we discussed last pod, I saw a really good team for a half and then they just let up in a major way. And I think that's human nature and that happens. And they've responded the last three games. And to me, it's just that defense, man. Like Book scored 34 in 29 minutes. And I know that's going into the all-star selections for reserves. That's like the obvious no-duh storyline that you have to talk about. But just how they shut down Dame. And I know that, look, that team is missing a lot of good dudes, but they have shooters around and they have guys who can get stuff done. And they just... I've never watched a Dame game where he kind of looks like he just can't shake loose. And I know he had 24, but And it was even an efficient 24, but they took the ball out of his hands or just straight denied it so many times.
Yeah.
As a team, I think that's a really good baseline to talk about just how well they're clicking, because like even when the Blazers go pick and roll and get Mikal off Dame, they were still holding up pretty well aside from that second quarter. So I think that's, to me, and you wrote about it before the year started, this is supposed to be a defensive team, and so far they look every part of a top five defensive team, I think.
Yeah, the defense is the part to point out, because we're seeing what we were talking about with this team in the first 15, 20 games of the season. Was we kept looking at that that Pacers game, where like that's really the only shootout they've played. Like you're supposed to like, this is with the way the NBA is and how much 3-point shooting has taken over and just the flow of games. We see these 115 plus games for both teams, like across the board. And they didn't really have one for a while. I mean, I'm scrolling through here and 119, 113 to Cleveland, which was an awful game. But then the Milwaukee game, 125 to 124, Philadelphia, 120 to 111, the Brooklyn game, 128 to 124. They finally started mixing those in. And not to say it was a good or a bad thing, but it was just that they were missing the offensive punch that they got. I think that's so important that the defense was playing the way it was, which is, it's like an obvious thing to say, but when you really analyze these games and look at them, the Pelicans, that was just like just a strange occurrence, but Memphis shot 5 of 33 from 3 and the Suns hit a franchise record 24 threes of 46. And then in this Portland game, Portland shot 12 of 39. They were 31%. The Suns hit 49% of their threes, 16 of them. And so I think that there was some shooting shots finally going in that should have been. And like, just like the same kind of thing we were talking about earlier in the year with regression and all that kind of stuff. Those numbers will fluctuate. But the fact that the defense was there through all these games was very important. And I don't know if I have anything grand to say about the form that they're in at the moment. I think the thing that I'm the most interested in is how are they going to patch together when this streak stops, essentially, is kind of what I'm looking at. And to be as negative as I always am, but like they're going to lose 3 of 5 here at some point. And after that, I really want to see how they start to play great teams after that. Because they've played Memphis super shorthanded, New Orleans not a good team, Portland super shorthanded, Brooklyn was shorthanded, they lost that game, Orlando had no one. If it wasn't for that Boston-Milwaukee-Philly stretch, Boston didn't even have Jaylen Brown, but if it wasn't for that stretch of those guys, or those three wins, sorry, you'd be looking at this and saying like they're only beating bad teams, which they're not. And that Indiana win was great as well. They got Utah and Denver earlier in the year. Not trying to say they don't have quality wins, but I'm now excited to just see how they look in the second half of the schedule, because I think it's going to start off pretty difficult just based on Charlotte, Chicago, Minnesota, Lakers, and Warriors at the end here. It's probably going to be difficult for them at the start. And it just has me eager to see them in the next couple of weeks, which has been my answer to a lot of their play recently, which is a sign of a good team.
I have no idea when the schedule's coming out, but it has to come out soon because we're almost there. But if you just look at who they haven't played, I don't think they've played Utah more than once. The Lakers, I believe, they're going to play them once upcoming here in a sec. So, I mean, the second half of the schedule is definitely going to be tougher. I can't see it being easier if I'm just looking at it blindly right now. But, I mean, that's the thing, is when teams kind of figure out what they're doing, that's going to be
– yeah.
What's interesting is teams haven't figured out what they're doing. And to me, that's fascinating too, because we're on a few weeks here where like we're trying to ask them last night after Portland, like they're so good at turning their defense into offense, and you just see like as soon as they get a stop, it just feels like their opponent's in trouble, and you kind of have this feel that they're in this rhythm when they get stops, and it has snowballed especially in the last three games.
Yeah, that's a really good point. They have a unique feature of going from second to fifth gear in three possessions if they get stops.
Yeah.
It feels like they just explode once they put defense together.
Yeah, and you ask that question to Mikel, and you're just like, well, we get more confident. And it's like, okay, well, I can tell. Like,
it's an obvious thing, because he answered it in a way where it's like, that's just basketball, and I completely agree with him and kind of knew that was going to be the answer. But it's also just very apparent that once they start to play defense at a high level, their offense is just the best it's ever going to be. Like, it's
right.
Their offense isn't – they are very, very rarely going to have nights like shootout-esque where – they're letting up like 135 to 130 or anything like that. Like that Cleveland game, even like they weren't giving up an absolute metric ton of points. Like I don't think we're going to see many games like the Cleveland game. And that's why it was so uncharacteristic for them, and why it's easy for me to shout it out when it happened a month ago, because there was just like no cohesive play on either side of the floor there. Damian Jones.
Yes.
So the Suns waived center Damian Jones today. Today's Tuesday. That is the day of the week. Jones had his non-guaranteed deal become guaranteed on Thursday. Shout out to David Nash, our Down Under podcast correspondent, for seeing that out a couple days ago. And I think, Kevin, this is a rather obvious move for them to make, and a smart one to make. Once Kaminsky pretty much got here and played the way that he did, there was no real reason for Jones to be on the roster, because now you've just got three centers who have played well for you. And even if there's one bad injury, you've still got two of those guys. Now they've gotten healthy. Frank has played well, and the timing of the guarantee just kind of brought it to a head. He didn't play well in his minutes, which is unfortunate, because I thought in the preseason he looked pretty good. And you saw the clear positives to him and why he's a guy that's still in the NBA right now, despite how he's looked the past couple of seasons. But then again, when the regular season came and he started to get those real minutes, we saw again, like, just he's in the wrong spot. He's fouling too much. It's just sometimes it doesn't add up for guys, unfortunately. And it hasn't still for him yet.
I think John Hollinger was the one who was like, I'm surprised Damian Jones is on the roster. When they signed him, and that was a little mean, maybe. I mean, he's a really good athlete, but you just saw just how raw he is still as a prospect. He got a good dunk off in this final game. Took one dribble from the 3-point line. Another center on the Suns could probably learn to do that. But
sorry, I wasn't gonna let it sneak by. Go ahead.
That's fine. I'll take that anyway. But yeah, I mean, it's roster space. It's a little bit of salary. They're at 14 now. And I believe you looked it up, and I don't remember what you told me, but end of March 24th, 25th, the trade deadline. So they kind of have more flexibility with their roster. If they have to take on, you know, if you have to take on an expiring or something weird like that, and just to get a deal done and you get something else in return that you really want, things like that, they're capable of doing that. Maybe they somehow are confident that Jalen Smith can come out of this G League stint in a few weeks and just start maybe contributing. But I don't know. I don't take much out of it, other than I think that they do need I think they need a real center behind DA. If he gets hurt, like Dario has been great and Frank has been great, but just defensively having that shot blanking anchor is kind of, you know, as much flack as we give DA, that's really important in letting Mikel and Chris Paul and Devin kind of pressure the ball like they've been doing. And when they do get blown by because they can be aggressive, then there's insurance policy back there. So I think they do need to find someone else kind of in the Damian Jones role. I just don't know who that would be at this moment.
Yeah. Two things. Damian Jones is 25, and because you watch him, and I had a couple people who like text me and be like, yeah, like he's like 21, 22. I was like, no, he's 25. He came out, I think, when he was 20 or 21, and then he's now been in the league for, I think this is his fifth year. So he just looks the part of just this modern raw center who's going to take a lot of time, and he's already 25 and is still at that point. So he's definitely someone, again, and this is why the Suns signed him. Like, he's definitely someone you look at and say, like, if we get him in our system and we develop him and have him for like a year, it could really pay off for us down the line. But it just didn't come together here quickly enough, and they're just going in a different direction right now, which makes a ton of sense. The other thing is, when you brought up Jalen Smith, I'm one game behind on his G League results. He had two good games, and he went over six on Saturday, I want to say. They lost by his team, the Agua Caliente Clippers. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. They lost by 39, Kevin. He was minus 36 in 20 minutes. Gonna have to watch that one back and see what happened there, because goodness gracious, that's not great. The G League is so the G League is very hilarious, because you can post the clips of him looking amazing, and you can find those clips for he's teammates with Jamias Ramsey out of, I believe, Texas Tech is the rookie. I'm thinking about who's on the Kings, and he looks incredible in some of these games, just amazing. And you'll get that in these games with athleticism and talent that Smith has, but then you'll also just get these games where it kind of disappears because it's so easy to fall out of the flow of a game when it never has any flow in the first place, and it's just up and down, up and down, up and down, missing shots, mistake here, mistake there. It's not great basketball, so I'm gonna have to watch that back anyway. That's our Jalen Smith G League check-in. We'll be sure to keep that up in next week's episode. I want to ask you this, Kevin, to close. Do you see something on this team that they can look to target either on the trade market or in free agency? Because I honestly don't. The Damian Jones spot is what makes sense to me, like a more sturdy center there, but I don't know.
I'm trying to think. I mean, shooter like JJ Redick is probably out of there. I mean, he's getting older, but he still has kind of this cloud about him. So I don't know if that would fit, but you could plug him in, someone like him, and that would be a role that the same thing that Langston Galloway is playing. And he was playing it really well when he was playing. So I don't know if you need that. But yeah, I think lanky, tall center who can block shots and move a little bit is still a priority a bit.
Yeah. Just a more traditional center, because they've got three technically, but Kaminsky's like a four, and Dario's a four playing small ball five. That's kind of the spot, though. I think it's like the 10th spot on the roster, basically, because I really don't think you can look at, obviously there's the 10th spot, because when Kaminsky's starting, which is just going to keep happening, I guess, until they start losing, which I can't fault it, like I said last week. But you've got Dario behind DeAndre. He shouldn't go anywhere. Payne's been great. And then obviously Cam Johnson and Jay Crowder is nine. They shouldn't go anywhere. But it's like that 10th spot where each one has played well. But if you added someone like a real impact guy there who's more of just a shooter who can do a little bit more, which I guess would be Redick, someone like that is what I could talk myself into. But teams like them are just looking for that extra body or two. I brought this up when I was talking to Brendan Clean on Locked On Suns. Do you remember when Philly had that year where they just got like Glenn Robinson and James Ennis and all these like random wings because they needed more wings? Like the Suns don't really need to make any moves like that. They have each one more as the third string point guard / two guard. They've got Langston Galloway and Javon Carter there as well. If they wanted to add another like athletic wing, they've already got Abdul Nader, and down low, I guess, is really the only place I would look for depth. I don't really see it. Now, if someone, the right name comes across on the buyout market, we'll see. But I also do not think that it's a good idea for them to be super aggressive on the trade market in terms of trying to win now. That is like an obvious thing that I just want to bring up and say, do not advise that. I think it's far more about winning this year, winning next year, to line up the young guys for the future, whatever Chris's future is with the team.
I don't want to get ahead of ourselves here, but I think they can sit on the phone lines. And if someone offers someone who's like an upgrade over one of the rotation guys they have, like they're in that spot where they can say, is this guy going to fit in and not mess up what we have a good thing going? I don't think you want to go busting this thing up too much, like you said. So it's either that, or I think when I talk about not getting ahead of ourselves, like they're in a position like kind of like the Nuggets, where if you like a prospect a lot and the team is just like over them, and you can go hunting like a Bol Bol or a that type of guy, even like a Chris Boucher, where you just get these guys who people think are like these weird developmental guys and you're going to have to work with them and they're not going to play. Like, they could go do that. They don't have room to stash them, but that's why you get rid of Damian Jones, because that's kind of the whole deal there, is he's kind of tapped out on his potential. So if you get a young guy who just a prospect and you want to work with him, I think this is a good time to consider those type of options that are kind of more sustainable, if you can say that, instead of win now, even though obviously they're trying to win now.
Yeah. I mean, you're kind of looking at former first round picks or anyone like that who hasn't quite worked out in like a year or two, maybe. I kind of get what you're going with a bit. Like, I can't really, like, that Bull's like a decent example, but there are guys like that who kind of flutter on a roster for a couple of years and teams don't really have a plan for them. And the Suns could use that spot and really try and see if they have something in someone as like a no risk, high reward type of situation with that last roster spot, which is a good way to use your positive culture right now. The established bits that they have right now, which is why I talk about like Dario and those guys. Like, obviously there are better backup centers than, not a lot than Dario, but there are better backup wings than those guys, and there's better backup point guards than Cam, but they're really dead set in a good way on having their guys. And when you have your guys already and they're playing well, like, that has to be a much better player, in my opinion, for you to consider. And I just don't think that kind of deal is going to be out there for them, or it's going to make sense.
Probably not.
Okay. You ready to see LaMelo tomorrow? You excited? LaMelo Hive.
Make sure to tweet bad things all game long about him. Write out his full name so they can search it. Yeah.
Oh, does he actually have like a, I thought he actually had like a,
no, he has a
Derrick Rose-esque presence on Twitter.
Oh yeah.
If you full name them.
I like LaMelo though. I'm excited to see him. I'm not going to speak poorly on him, I don't think.
When did Terry Rozier turn into Ray Allen? Can we talk about this? Terry Rozier is shooting 45% from three this year on nearly 8 attempts a game. Last year, he shot 41% on nearly 7 attempts per game. Just a weird thing in the league, Kevin. Like, you read the all-star cases for these guys, like, everyone's shooting 50, 40, 90 this year.
Yeah.
The whole no fans thing or limited fans thing is clearly changing something there. I think people are just getting better at shooting too, and that was inevitably going to be a thing that the league runs into in the next like 5 to 10 years with how much it's trending that way. But man, yeah, it's funny to see like Terry Rozier, expert sharpshooter out of nowhere. Like, he's clearly been putting in the work, because he wasn't much of a shooter coming out of college. He didn't shoot right away either with Boston. So shout out to him. That should be a fun game. If you haven't seen Charlotte this year, they've got some league pass fun, mostly because if you click on their broadcast, their play by play guy, I don't know his name off the top of my head, is incredible and screams about everything. My kind of guy. All right. We'll be back next week, everyone. See ya.